From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Is a greenhouse in your future? I've never had one, and I've always been not so secretly jealous of friends who do, whether to propagate their seedlings in late winter into spring or grow more tropicals and other houseplants than fit in their house or who knows what. A new book by horticulturist Leslie Halleck called Home Greenhouse Revival is a tempting look at what can be accomplished inside a backyard greenhouse and details which architectural style, building materials, and mechanical systems match which climate regions and also match the particular kinds of plants you wish to grow. More in a moment about whether a greenhouse might fit your garden plans sooner or later, but first, these messages.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
Leslie Halleck, a self-described professional plant geek who's good at botanical business, has worked in many facets of the horticulture industry since receiving her master's in horticulture from Michigan State. Her consultancy, Halleck Horticultural, offers support to green industry businesses and home growers alike, and since 2020, she's been teaching online courses in horticulture, botany, and business through UCLA Extension as well. I'm glad to welcome her back to the program today. Hi, Leslie, how are you?
I am so happy to be here with you again. It's been a while since we chatted.
I know. I watch all your Instagram stuff and, you know, read your blog and see what you're up to and so forth. But yeah, so from a distance, but yes, not in person.
Well, that's nice. That's nice to hear. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So we'll do a book giveaway of Home Greenhouse Revival, the new book with the transcript of this show over on awaytogarden.com. But I want just to sort of start saying, what made you want to write this book, and why does the title have the word revival in it, aka Home Greenhouse Revival?
Yes. So as usual, I was approached by my current publisher to write this topic. You know, there are a lot of books by hobbyists and influencers out there these days, but sometimes you need a credentialed plant geek to write on a particular topic. And that's what Cool Springs Press tapped me. And that's kind of how I've gotten roped into all my books, is that sometimes it's tough to find someone with the education background, credentials, and experience, but also has a public facing, presence and who also writes. And so I just kind of encompass those things. And because I have a master's degree in floriculture, flowering physiology, and greenhouse production, environmental controls, they tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, would you do this? And it had been a little while. I had taken a break and I thought, okay, I think I'm ready to birth another one of these babies. I like the creative process. And I chose this title and used the word revival for two reasons. One, I think greenhouses are having another moment. They're having a resurgence in interest, partly because I think they're so much more accessible to people these days. There's so many manufacturers out there offering so many new options that just weren't available to people, you know, even 10 years ago. So I think it as an embedded trend, gardening never goes away in our culture, but things come and go in popularity. And I felt like greenhouses were due for another moment. So revival speaks to that. But
okay,
there's also a lot of folks out there who have tried and failed, or tried and struggled. And you see a lot of abandoned greenhouses and backyards that are now used as storage sheds because they just couldn't get it to work because they didn't know what they didn't know. So it's twofold. I think greenhouses are having a moment and a comeback for many important reasons. And I also hope to encourage folks that maybe gave up on their greenhouse to hit the reboot button and revive it.
Yeah. Well, and I think you have fairly recently relocated, pretty much across the country, what, from Texas to the Pacific Northwest?
Yes,
You're in Oregon
Oregon.
now, yeah. Did you have a greenhouse in Texas? Do you have a greenhouse where you are now, or is there one in the plan, or?
So the irony of my situation is I did not know I was going to be uprooting my entire life, leaving it behind and moving across country when I was writing this book. So I have now landed in Oregon, completely starting over from scratch.
Wow.
So I suppose, I don't have a greenhouse at the moment. I have the perfect spot for a greenhouse, which was part of
Okay.
the reason I bought the property that I'm on. But I have to start all over from scratch. So in a way, it's kind of a fun opportunity is that I'll be doing this again along with my readers of this book. And I haven't quite decided exactly what I'm going to do yet. So it's kind of on the one hand, it's frustrating that I can't jump into, showing people and videoing things in my greenhouse with this book, but at the same time, I get to start over completely from scratch, right along with them, and figure out what I want to do, which is essentially how I've laid out my book. I've worked with a number of different types of greenhouses in Texas. It's different. Greenhouse growing in hot southern climates is different than growing in northern cold climates. But so I will be taking that revival journey along with all of my readers. So I'm hoping to maybe kind of turn that into a fun thing that I'm
Yeah.
having to start all over again
Yeah.
from the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah, and as you point out in the book in many different ways, it's a decision and a process that deserves contemplation. There are many things to think about, and the new book is like a handbook, and it covers every geeky, nerdy detail of, how you measure the light and the proper irrigation methods and fertilization and outsmarting pests and so many different things. Glazing materials and, everything.
Yes.
But instead of getting into that nitty-gritty right away, I wanted to first sort of walk together through the journey of becoming a greenhouse owner, which is again where you are again right now in your life. So if I'm considering, oh, I might want to do this finally, the first decision is not about the eventual design. Oh, I want it to be this tall and have this many, whatevers, a Gothic style versus a blah, blah, wood versus metal or vice versa. It's not about that right away, about the finished structure and what it'll look like, but it's about what I want to grow, I think you point out in the book, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I think so many people starting out on their greenhouse journey, get really pulled into the logistics of the build and the aesthetics and the materials, all of which are important. Don't get me wrong. And as you say, I go into all of those things in the book. But I in so many of the other greenhouse books out there, I mean, that's their primary focus, right? Where that sends people down the wrong path is that you can spend all of this time choosing the style, the build, the glazing, all of this stuff, and then you get to the end and realize this isn't going to create the environment I need to grow what I wanted to grow in the first place. You
Right.
have to take a plant-centric approach to making greenhouse decisions first. Think about your climate, your region, your weather, what the extremes are, and then what is it you really hope to grow and harvest? Are you going to do cut flowers? Do you just want to jumpstart seedlings? Are you overwintering tropical orchids? Are you trying to do many different things at the same time? You need to get to know the plants you want to grow, what their environmental requirements are, and then reverse engineer that decision back to the type of greenhouse and materials and equipment that it's going to take to create that. And what you might end up with is a very different type of greenhouse than you thought you wanted to begin with. I can't tell you how many very expensive greenhouse builds that I've been brought in after the fact to consult on, only to have to tell people this is not going to do what you thought it was going to do.
Oh,
And
ee.
that's a big bummer, but as a certified professional horticulturist, I tend to get called in on those kinds of things once
Right.
things aren't working, and then
Right.
I have to be the person that says no or delivers the bad news or
Right,
says
right,
you're going to
right.
have to spend a lot more money to retrofit this to do what you want to do. And so that's the biggest trip up for people is not taking into account the plants first, what environment they need, and then what greenhouse configuration can create that environment. I think that's the most important thread through the conversation that I'm creating in this book.
Right. And in the book you have, I think there's more than 75 plants that you kind of go into and talk about their particular needs and where they fit in the sort of spectrum of greenhouse possibilities, you know, cool, you know, having to do with temperature and light levels and all kinds of things.
Yes.
And sometimes even like space, like
yeah.
if you want to grow tomato, you know, vining tomatoes, if you want to grow things that are bigger versus smaller, or they're going to make, you know, it's very different than if you want to have a lot of benches for thousands of seedlings. You know,
right.
I mean, it's just different.
Right. And a lot of folks end up wanting to do those things simultaneously and very
yeah.
quickly find out that their space or configuration or the shape isn't adequate for what they want to
right.
do. So I really encourage people to sit down and be thoughtful. Not that your plan won't change along the way. Maybe you as you get good at something, you decide you want to do something different. And now you might have to alter, or you might have to put up another smaller greenhouse with a different, you know, with different conditions. And so,
right.
but if you don't take the plants into consideration first, then you can go down the wrong path. And I think, again, this is where Home Greenhouse Revival, I try to differentiate. I get very specific about actually how to grow all of these plants. You know, you're never going to hear bright diffuse light from me. That phrase is never going to come out of my mouth. It's never
right.
going to be in one of my books because it's not relevant and it's not useful when you are growing in controlled environments. You need specifics. So I've given you at least 75 very detailed plant profiles, but what you'll see are little nuggets at the end of those profiles. I tell you grow the same because, you know, I have a word count limit in these books.
Right.
I never get to include every, and there's so many other plants that after the fact, I'm like, dang it, I wish I'd gotten that in there. But
right.
I do a grow the same and I list a bunch of other plants that I
right.
didn't
so
have
it's
room.
Right. It's
Yeah.
really many more than 75.
Yeah,
Right.
it's many
Right.
more. And then you use the similar growing instructions I've given you for the primary plant.
Right.
You can use for all of those additionally. So, I mean, I have tried to hit as many plants as I could squeeze into the book, from all of your standard crops to lots of unusual exotics as well.
Right. It was interesting for me to, you know, look at the, you know, like the fact that I think I might have just, maybe I knew it somewhere in my brain, but not consciously, you know, not top of mind. I mean, just that, for instance, the different shapes of buildings that you could create, you know, the roof line, the proportions, you know, from a geodesic dome to a traditional, you know, little shed kind of shape. They're not just about their looks, because some of them work better in certain regions and certain climates than others. Certain, you know, if you have a snow load or you don't have a snow load, or if you're a very hot place or not a very hot place, and glazing material similarly. And, you know, there were many ahas in there like that. But there are some things that kind of everybody needs, like you need a flat space to put one of these on, no matter
sure.
which one you end up with,
sure.
right? So like if we're starting our adventure and we're thinking, could a greenhouse be for me? I mean, where do we start? Do we, like, you have a list of kind of companies in the back that I think
yes.
create the, I don't know if you call them kits or not, you know, that,
yes.
yeah, you know, do I start there, or do I start, you know, where do we begin?
Right. So after you begin with the plants and your
yeah.
climate and you start there, and then it's like, okay, now I need to get into the physical logistics of what I'm going to build. Yes. A lot of people don't realize that the shape of the greenhouse and the structure, can vary by region, right? So if you have heavier snow loads, something like a Granville, you know, shaped roof can handle the heavier snow loads, you know, better. If you are in a very, very cold climate, geodesic domes, for example, tend to lose less ambient heat than other shapes. Taller greenhouses with higher ceilings, it's much easier to manage temperature control and to cool those greenhouses than a smaller greenhouse. A lot of
right.
this is counterintuitive. You think a smaller greenhouse is going to be easier
to manage.
It's going
to be
yeah,
cozy.
But that's actually harder to manage the environment. It has to be
yes.
vented more often. So that's harder. So, you know, you have to really think about all of those things. And so those are going to differ depending on where you are. What's not really going to differ is some of the fundamental structural things. Yes. Do you have a flat area that can accommodate the size of greenhouse you want that isn't on sinking sandy soil. You know, what kind of foundation do you need to build for it depending on the soil, how heavy the materials are that you're using? And then orientation is also a really important consideration. You know, generally you want the ability to run the long side of the greenhouse facing south, so your pitch runs east-west without a lot of obstructions. Your winter sun angle is going to be lower. So if you've got a bunch of trees on that side, you could find yourself without really any direct sun, you know, in the winter on that greenhouse. So you really need to think about location, orientation, and obstructions, shade from the house, shade from the trees. Or if you're in a really cold climate and you're trying to just use passive solar and without, you know, heating, then, you know, you may be better off building a lean-to up against a building that's insulated with just southern exposure and no obstructions. So all of those placement, orientation, you know, do you have a place for water to drain? Can you get water and power to your greenhouse? All of those logistics are in the book, but those are kind of the considerations that everybody has to make, regardless of where you are.
Right. And I mean, like, I think you mentioned in the book that in winter, you know, you're just talking about, like, you know, you can't have, you know, be shaded by a lot of trees and so forth, but you need to have 6 hours of sun a day, I think, is the desired amount or something,
ideally.
even in winter. I mean, so, you know, we have to think about, we can't go out in the middle of August or something and go, oh, well, that's a sunny spot. Well, 6 hours a day, no, because the sun angle is so different. You know, we just have to really, really think very consciously and carefully about the possibility. And I think the other thing that you said about the, like, is the piece of ground that is not just flat, but also is it sort of stable, good drainage? Is it, you know, what happens when there is weather and so forth on that space? What happens there? You know,
And you know, a lot of folks may have very limited options. They may have a very small backyard and, you know, you need to work with what you have. A lot of people have very shaded back, smaller backyards. And so I'm going to tell you, well, that's what grow lights are for. And I think that's another big misconception for people. And we don't need to get into all the, you know, tech stuff there. It's all in the book. And you can go back to my book, Gardening Under Lights, if you want a deep dive on grow lights. But people have the notion that because a greenhouse lets a lot of light and it's transparent, that you never need supplemental lighting. And that's not necessarily the case, whether it be for extending that winter photo period or getting enough light intensity on those seedlings or those tomatoes that you have in the greenhouse when it's cooler. You generally need more light in winter than you may have, depending on what your growing goals are.
Yes. And I have friends who, even in a southern location, who, you know, southern part of the United States, I mean, who, because they want to start their tomatoes and their whatever early, they have grow lights inside their greenhouse in that sort of February period and March period.
And most commercial greenhouses are all using supplemental lighting.
That's
pretty standard. So I think that's an aha for a lot of people. And so they won't run power to the greenhouse. And then they realize, boy, I thought I was going to be able to grow these amazing seedlings in January and February in my greenhouse, but there's just not enough light.
Yeah. So how small is too small, would you say, from what you know about greenhouse? Like, if, you know, for a person to begin, and again, it's probably dependent on the plants, but there's probably some spaces that are unmanageably small. You know, do you have a size that you feel is the beginning of a good size?
Well, I think a lot of people, you know, just out of affordability and what used to be mostly available, those little 6x8, you know, greenhouse kits are what a lot of people start out with. And those are the ones that usually end up getting used for
Now,
this is not to say that if you have a small space and that's all the space you can accommodate, as long as you plan for exactly what you're going to grow in there. I mean, that's a great spot for growing a few trays of seedlings and overwintering some, you know, marginally tender plants or perennials or things like that. If you're mindful of that and you plan that space, you can still use a little 6x8 greenhouse for very specific purposes. Just don't assume you're going to be able to do everything you want to do in a tiny little space like that. Because remember, other stuff takes up space. benches, you know, a water sink or whatever it else is in there. And then all of a sudden you have a lot less room for plants than you thought you did. And I think that that's one of the biggest regrets for most greenhouse enthusiasts is that they almost always wish they went bigger from the start.
Right.
You know, something to consider is if you're in a cold climate and you're using, you know, passive heating, like big water barrels to hold heat for the nighttime, boy, that takes up a lot of room. And you got to plan for that before you
Right.
even have plants in the greenhouse. So, you know, I mean, I think I don't generally like to encourage people to go any smaller than like 10 by 12. Even that is going to get tight on you pretty fast, but you also just have to work with the space you have. You know, when
Yes.
I'm thinking greenhouses, of course, my mind, because I also am so much in the commercial production world, is I don't really want a greenhouse, you know, shorter than 30 feet long, you know, 30 feet wide, but not everybody can do that or has the
Yeah.
space for that. But,
Yeah.
you know, think about if a greenhouse is only 8 feet wide, you know, and you've got benches, all there's going to be room for is like a little aisle for you to walk through the middle. And you just have to be okay with that and plan
Yes.
for it.
Yes.
So think about ergonomics, think about all the other stuff that goes in the greenhouse, plus all the plants that you want to try to fit in there. And then obviously work within your budget, whether you're DIYing or buying a kit or having it built, and you'll have to compromise there as best
Yeah.
you can. But you can go very small and you can do things with the little mini greenhouses that, you know, you can put up against the house, but it's just, you have to modify your expectations about
Yeah.
what you
So
can fit.
we have, you know, maybe 4 minutes or so, and I just want to, so again, to get back to sort of, there's a list of companies that make, and again, I guess the word is kits in the back of the book, but do I start by, I mean, I don't know how to build a greenhouse, and I don't know if my contractor that could help me, you know, redo my kitchen would know how to build a green, you know, it's not the same
No.
kind of person, right? I don't call
Right.
that person. So how, what do I do? Who's my
Sure.
best resource?
So I squeezed as many resources as I could into the
Okay.
back of the book. So you have a lot of quality kit providers from, you know, much more utilitarian to much fancier. Many of those kits are DIY. They provide very detailed instructions on how to put them together. I usually recommend you find a local contractor, shed builder. The greenhouse companies will often have contractors that work in your area. There are also lots of local greenhouse manufacturers and builders that obviously I couldn't list in the book because, I mean, that just
Sure.
depends on where you are. So I usually recommend kind of teaming up. If you buy a nicer a kit that you feel is going to be harder for you to do, make sure you tie in with a local contractor or local greenhouse, you know, builder to help you with that. A lot of times, a really good handyman, a really good contractor who builds sheds and things like that can come help you put that kit up. But you also want to, before you do that, check your local laws, permitting, setbacks. Do you need permits for electricity? If you're not building a permanent foundation, usually not. If you're putting in a permanent foundation, you might need a permit. I've seen a lot of folks have to take their greenhouses down after they've built them because the neighbor calls code, it's a code violation, and now
Yeah.
you've wasted a ton of time and money. So also make sure you know all of your local laws. But the companies I provided are a great place to start. Also look in your area for local greenhouse builders, and
Yeah.
sometimes you can
Yeah.
work in conjunction
Because
with
I
them.
feel like I would want to talk it through with someone before I made any
Absolutely.
decisions. And again, because there's so many things about which shape is right for my region and which, you know, which glazing material and
Right.
which systems and all those things.
Right.
In the in last minute, I just want to say, when you do figure out where yours is going to go in Oregon, there, your new
Yes.
greenhouse, what's the group of plants, or what is it that you want to have in it? What's your plant that leads your decision?
So I'm always a hybrid and I call myself an everythingist. I love to grow everything. And so, you know, for me, reining myself in is usually editing down is usually the challenge, but I grow a lot of food. So I'll be doing, of course, a lot of starts, my own starts. I like to grow kind of unusual tropical fruits. So I'll probably be doing some overwintering of that. I love to grow alpine strawberries, which are the most tasty strawberries you'll ever
Yes.
grow. And they're day neutral. So they're a lot easier to grow than a lot of other strawberries. And I'll teach you about that in the book. I will probably do unusual herbs. I might be doing some saffron crocus. I do, you know, I'll probably be sticking some orchids out there because I, go through different plant obsessions. So I'll probably be either zoning my greenhouse or maybe putting up two separate smaller greenhouses so that I can have different environments. Yeah, I haven't quite decided yet.
Well, I'll be looking forward to seeing that, especially what happens. But Leslie Halleck, the new book is called Home Greenhouse Revival. We'll have a giveaway with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com. And it's good to talk to you again. And it's kind of a fun thing. Now, if you get me into trouble, I can call you and yell at you. Is
Sure. Okay,
that
if you have any questions or you decide
right?
you want to go down this path, you just give me a holler and I'll help
I'm teasing you, but yes. And thank you so
you
much. Talk to you again soon. And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you again soon, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook or on Instagram as at awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, HighMowingSeeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, WhiteFlowerFarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and RobinHoodRadio.com.